Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Well, it's a really good day to run into Anthony Slater on the Bud Light guest line. Bud Light, easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Oh, the NBA trade deadline has certainly given us an awful lot to talk about. Slater, thank you very much for your time. I know you're a busy man today. I just saw you over on NBA TV. You're popping up all kinds of places. Did a little Russillo podcast earlier in the week. So thanks for your time, pal. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. And, you know, whenever there's a little news, we love leaning into it. And obviously the news that the James Wiseman era is over. I predicted he might get moved before the trade deadline. Didn't exactly think this would be the return when you really want to move all the, you know, dots together. It's basically James Wiseman for Gary Payton II. Who would have ever thought, right?
Weird move, right? It's just, they were searching for a veteran who could help now, and it was not easy to get with James Wiseman on the market. And they were pretty creative in the way they got it to this point that gets Gary Payton II back. And I mean, the simplest argument is they found a veteran they know fits. I mean, he helps. I think it, if you take two steps back and look at the whole string of moves over the last couple of years, it's not a fantastic look, but you can credit them for accepting mistakes and like you said, kind of leaning into it.
Lucas is in my ear saying, please ask him about the overall Wiseman era. Lucas, there was no James Wiseman era. There is no era. He played 60 games. That's it. What do you think of the James Wiseman era?
It was tricky. It was convoluted. Go back to the drafting of him was in November. Drafts are never in November. It was the COVID year. 60 games sounds like a career for James Wiseman when you consider his college career. Three games, right?
Right.
And then I can remember it was wild. His first training camp, we couldn't cover in person because of COVID, so they would just send out these little blips of footage and we hadn't seen him yet. And I remember they looked really impressive, and that's like what I'll always remember about those early days of the Wiseman era, where there was just those flashes of like, oh wow, they might have drafted like Giannis, right? I mean, like if I showed you some of his highlight film, and that's all you'd seen from his rookie year, remember they started him game one. I remember talking to the coaches behind the scenes. They're playing in Brooklyn, COVID year, empty arena. Game one, he'd missed the preseason because he got COVID, and they're like, we're starting him tonight. And it was like, whoa, they must have seen something behind the scenes. And then he went out and had like 19 points. And I remember he had a coast-to-coast dunk in Detroit like 2 days later, and it was just like, I mean, you can go back to the quotes.
I mean, remember it. I got it. Listen.
93-89. Right crossover dribble. Sees Wiseman, changes his mind. Shot by Plumlee, blocked by Wiseman, who picks up the loose ball. Dribbles down the right side. He's going to go all the way up and jam it. Wiseman going coast to coast with the slam.
I mean, we got a collection of James Wiseman highlights, yeah. All five of them.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy because it's like, you could think it was kind of like fan fiction or whatever that this guy was going to become some superstar, but you go look, Joe Lacob is on the record calling him basically a generational prospect. Steve Kerr, after four games, is like, we got to move things around. This guy's a foundational piece. Draymond Green is glowing about him in his early practices. So it seemed reasonable to believe that something might be coming, and then, we don't need to get into all of what has happened since. But, man, I mean, what a quick fall.
Of the things that happened to him, I mean, the injuries are the thing that jump out at you first, and his inability to grasp what the Warriors wanted him to do was second. But how much was he set back by playing on that team in 2021 that was so disjointed and so incomplete. How much did that impact his development here?
I think it had a pretty big impact. You know, I think they tried to force fit him in that starting lineup with Kelly Oubre, and I think we came to learn like that just was not a good lineup combination. I think one of their big mistakes, and it's been admitted, but from a coaching perspective, like trying to immediately turn him into like an Andrew Bogut, David West type, where it's like, all right, well, you need to learn how to do the dribble handoffs and like all the different stuff that like veteran warrior centers do. He wasn't built for that, and he certainly wasn't built for that as a 19-year-old. And that, you know, that's derailed him. I think sent him off tracks. And then I think the toughest break he faced was I thought he was actually getting a rhythm late that season. They were bringing him off the bench. Remember, they were running a lot of pick and rolls. Jordan Poole was just blossoming. And then he just comes down bad on his knee on a dunk attempt when I actually thought he played pretty well over like an 8-game stretch. Tears the meniscus, and that really sets him back.
It was too bad. It was just all star-crossed right from the get-go. And, you know, something that, and we got Anthony Slater here, our Warriors insider on 95.7 The Game. Something that Ray and I were talking about was he just, you know, he never fit the team's DNA. You know, a big man in the middle who might slow traffic down because he's in the low post was never who they were. And that might be the single biggest criticism of the draft pick. He was enough of a physical specimen to, I get why, in, let's face it, the 2020 NBA draft will not be remembered for its greatness. I mean, you're going to walk away with maybe four decent players out of that entire first round. So I get why they took the shot on James Wiseman, but maybe they shouldn't have based on that's not who they are. They tried to be something they weren't to accommodate the promise that might have been.
Yeah, I think what you got to remember about at the time, though, is like they thought they were shifting who they were. You know, Durant had left, Clay, you know, had gone ACL, and then how about he tears his Achilles the night they draft James Wiseman?
I know.
And they were like, yeah, we haven't traditionally, you know, we've traditionally been small ball, but we're changing, you know, Steph's getting older. We're moving into a new era. We just had the worst record in the league. You know, even that next season, they didn't think they were going to necessarily compete for a title, which they didn't. It was pretty consensus. I mean, like Steve Kerr, you know, was in for drafting James Wiseman. Steph Curry didn't necessarily want a LaMelo Ball behind him in the lineup, but he wanted a center he could throw lobs to. Like, the skill set was tantalizing. In retrospect, yeah, you know, they never really have needed and shouldn't have ever thought they were going to need like a post up big. But I couldn't even remember at the time, and I was an advocate of drafting him. It was like, well, at minimum, you got a JaVale McGee right away, and then with the chance to become, you know, something huge long term. And it made sense at the time, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, hindsight is 2020. And just the fact that it was just raw in ways that you didn't know he was, or at least I think most people didn't know he was, and that just was really a hindrance.
It's ridiculous to ask this question, but I'll try to frame it so that it's not quite so stupid. Going to a team like Detroit that really has nothing to play for except a chance at Victor Wembanyama, and announcing immediately that he's going to start, is that good in your mind for his development, or are they maybe rushing this a little?
Have they announced he's starting?
Yeah.
Wow. Didn't know that. Thank you for that.
I'm here to help.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
Hasn't practiced yet, but he's starting.
Yeah, Mark Spears apparently is the author of that.
Okay, good. Well, I think it's better than sitting on the bench in Portland. And, like, you know, I've been at the practices lately, and, like, you know, he's always had a really good attitude behind the scenes, but you could just tell it was just becoming detached. The situation had just run its course with the Warriors. It's why I think they finally came to grips with trading him. I'm not saying Detroit starting him right away in this complete losing environment is fantastic for him, but it's better than what he had been experiencing. And he's just got to play NBA games, and even if they lose by 25 and he's a minus 23 for five straight games, I just think it's better than a DNP, and I think we all kind of agree on that.
Anthony Slater with us here on Damon and Ratto. So Gary Payton II is back into the mix. When do you think this plan was actually initiated? Is this something that they came up with, you know, kind of today out of nowhere, or is this something that Bob has had up his sleeve as a return to Gary Payton II as soon as he returned to active play, sort of been their X marks the spot of the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think that, like, somewhat kind of been in the back of their mind, really, even since he left. It was, like, an agonizing decision for him to leave. Like, he didn't want to. You know, he's kind of hinted, even behind the scenes, that he kind of longed to get back. Now, I don't think he ever thought this was a possibility. I'm very curious for his first, you know, press conference, probably tomorrow, for when he talks about it. But when they went, you know, they went searching the last couple of days for upgrades. Obviously, they were attempting to get an OG and an OB sweepstakes, which weren't even, didn't really even end up being realistic for anybody in the league. That's why he didn't get traded. But as they today tried to find veteran upgrades out there, you know, they talked to Portland and about maybe it being like a direct swap, but Portland didn't want James Wiseman, so they had to get creative to get something that Portland would take, you know, get something for James Wiseman that Portland would take in a package. And he was one of the few, I think, veterans that they did identify as can come in, and we know he can be in a closing lineup, because that was kind of their threshold that they had talked about. It was like, no, it's not just a ninth man upgrade that can play, you know, 14 minutes. It has to be somebody good enough to be in the DiVincenzo Kuminga realm of, like, on certain nights, he's one of our best five. And there are not many guys for that price range across the league that, you know, you could use James Wiseman to get that fit that description, but they knew that Peyton did, because he did it last season. He did it in the finals last season. So, shockingly, they went out and got the reunion done.
They got a trusted agent. And like I was saying earlier in the show, Anthony, if nothing else, maybe they added vibes, like at the trade deadline. Maybe that's what he will bring into the room, along with an on-point defender, so it doesn't have to all fall on, you know, Kuminga to be that point of attack defender. Real quickly on Ananobi, I thought that he was going to be off the board in Toronto when they made the addition of Poeltl. Like, why would you add him to subtract that guy? Were they close? Was there, do you know anything about the offer? If the Warriors really were in a late in the game discussion for Ananobi, what might have held it up?
From what I understand, like, the, you know, they were definitely in conversations with Toronto the last 48 hours or so about OG. You know, Kuminga was involved in those talks, and I, you know, my guess would be that's the holdup. I don't have that, you know, for sure, but I know that that's where Toronto's interest is. You mentioned Poeltl. I think that is actually a good deal to kind of bookmark, because when that went down, you know, I knew that they had been in discussions, the Warriors and the Raptors, and Wiseman's involvement within that. And then once the Raptors got Poeltl, started to get skeptical on it, because once you're adding Poeltl, why are you getting James Wiseman? So that seemed to fizzle out. And really, like I said, across the league, it seemed to fizzle out, because it just seems like Masai Ujiri postures a lot, and really, like, he will only take a deal if he's getting a home run deal, and nobody was really willing to offer that for an average. Like, OG Anunoby, in my opinion, kind of got a little bit overhyped the last couple weeks. So that never got, like, to the 5-yard line or anything like that, from my understanding.
Okay, well, he's a Hoosier. You know, they get people excited.
Yeah, you know, well, you need to be a GM somewhere, and Masai would have swindled you today.
What was, of all the trades made today, or really over the last 3 or 4 days, which is the one that will have the most practical positive effect, without question, without risk, for any of the teams involved?
Kevin Durant's of the Suns. I mean, KD, Booker, I mean, Chris Paul is like a fourth option, Ayton, you know, as the third best player on the team. Like, they just fit now. They have championship pedigree suddenly. Like, I don't know. I don't know. If you guarantee me Kevin Durant's healthy, and obviously that's an if, I think they're the title favorites now, personally.
Well, I thought that's why it was more of an open question, because I don't know that anybody can guarantee the health of a 34-year-old who's missed as much time as he has. It's the best trade, I think, but that presumes health. Is there one other than Durant that makes you feel that way?
I mean, look, I like what the Lakers did. I mean, I can't believe they got Vanderbilt and Beasley within that deal. I think it's funny that it's being hyped as, like, the D'Angelo Russell deal, when I'm like, that's probably, like, he's probably the third best player they got in it. But, you know, if we're talking, like, what changed the title landscape, I mean, the Lakers just went from the 13th seed to, like, well, probably a play-in team. So I don't think it's that, even though I like what they did. I mean, the Kyrie deal, if we go back 4 or 5 days, like, that makes Dallas more of a potential threat than they were last week. So there are a few out there, but Durant, to me, is the one that could rattle the league.
No doubt about it. I mean, he's a pretty damn good player, even though he might not be the leader or the come win my way guy that he hoped that he would be when he made the whole splash in Brooklyn to begin with. If you had to write the obituary on the Brooklyn Nets, what would be your opening couple sentences?
His toe was on the line. Remember the game 7 where you thought he hit the game winner over Milwaukee?
Yep.
The Bucks went on to win the title. Like, what if his pinky toe is behind the line and they win that series? Maybe they win the title. I mean, the Bucks did, so maybe everything's different. Yeah. I mean, that is a crazy era to rewrite, especially with all the off court stuff that goes so far beyond basketball. The vaccine stuff with Kyrie, it's wild.
It was nuts. It truly, truly was. So we have the trade deadline officially behind us, but that doesn't mean that we're done building rosters because a buyout market is about to emerge. I'm just going to throw some names at you. You tell me if you like any of them. You tell me if you think it'd be a big mistake. Dwight Howard, Serge Ibaka, Pat Bev, Reggie Jackson, Will Barton. Any names interest you there?
The Pat Beverly's interest, like, of those five, I think it's probably, like, the one that can have the most playoff impact. But the problem is they're so loaded with guards right now. I mean, their three top guys coming off the bench now is Poole, DiVincenzo, and Payton. Those are guards. So I think they need more of a big, maybe a stretch big. You know, Dwight Howard, no. Serge Ibaka, he hasn't made an impact on, his last three or four teams. I mean, he sounds like a good name, but he just hasn't done much. So, I don't love any of those. Will Barton's a little bit bigger, but I'm not sure they need a scoring punch like that off the bench. Already having Poole, so no. I mean, nothing screams. Like, is anyone out there going to be better than what Jermichael Green's brought lately? And Jermichael Green at this point is your 10th man.
So where realistically do these guys end up, assuming that this is the hand they've dealt themselves, and this is how it's going to be? What's their I don't want to say their top, the highest they can reach. What's the most likely place they'll end up?
Playoffs. Probably, it depends on what matchup they get in the first round. But I would just say this, and I've talked to a few people really since the Steph injury, and their opinion now is, just get us to April, whatever it is, April 17th in a first-round series with that established starting lineup all there for tip-off of game one, probably on the road. And then a bench that now is DiVincenzo, Poole, Payton, Kuminga, that stretches you down to 9. Very athletic, very versatile, very small, but interesting. And you tip off against whoever you get. Maybe that's Denver, maybe that's Memphis, maybe that is the Suns, and maybe you're slight underdogs, but you're dangerous. And whoever you're going against did not want to see you in the first round, and we'll see where it goes from there.
How do the Warriors make sure they don't repeat any developmental mistakes that they might have made with Wiseman, with Patrick Baldwin Jr.?
Bring him along slower, understand what the Curry ecosystem and the Curry ecosystem is. Don't try to force feed, a guy into a role he's incapable of playing, which I think, Baldwin is a different player, and it's probably part of why they drafted him, right? He's more of a field player, passing player, shooter, complementary player. Like, James Wiseman wanted post-ups and different stuff. And, to me, the biggest comparison there is Kuminga, but I think they learned so much with what went wrong with Wiseman's year one that I think they've just handled Kuminga much more delicately and smarter over the last couple of years, and I think you've seen it in the results that Kuminga's blossomed more because I just think it's tough for Love, but it's also just smarter, deployment of him in certain roles.
Do you think we see Steph before March?
No, I don't. At this point, it's such a weird injury that it's kind of speculative. I don't know for sure that we won't, but my guess would be he's missing at least a month.
Do we see GP2 Saturday against the Lakers?
I think so. He's healthy. He played last night. Physical tomorrow, sounds like. Everybody's got to pass it, and it's kind of a convoluted deal with Sadiq Bey and Atlanta, and Wiseman's got to get to Detroit, but I assume it'll be official and everyone will pass physicals tomorrow and you'll get press conferences. And then I think you'll see him Saturday night against a Lakers team that's going to have a lot of new pieces too.
For a minute there, when it looked like the trade was Sadiq Bey, what'd you think of that? I thought that's kind of an interesting move for the Warriors. I like him on the bench.
It creates this very strange what if going forward. Of course, you know, what they could have maybe drafted him back in the day, but now it's like literally you had him on the roster technically for, you know, 20 minutes or something like that. If Sadiq Bey really pops in Atlanta, it's gonna linger as a what if. But I will say about him, he's kind of disappointed in year three, and, you know, he's coming off Detroit's bench. They kind of soured on him. I mean, they traded him. That tells you something.
Always great to talk to you, Slater. Thank you very much for making time for us on a day you're extra busy.
Yeah, all right, fellas.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.